Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, if you want more from us, then please do consider checking out Red Men Plus as a club legend. That is the top tier that gets you extra perks and benefits, access to our exclusive club legend Discord chat. It will also give you free merchandise every year and a whole host of bonus features. Get involved on our club legends show. You can be on a show with the cast and crew of Red Men TV every week and a whole host of extra bonus perks, as well as all the usual brilliant videos and podcasts. Go to redmenplus.com and sign up as a club legend. Hello everyone, welcome to Red Men, welcome to the Build Up Show. I am joined by Chloe Bloxham and John Machin for this one. As we look ahead to Liverpool versus Bournemouth, with the overriding mantra of "Dear God, Liverpool, just win a game of football." Dad, hi. You come in quite a sunny disposition today, you know, yeah, the weather's all right.
Yeah, sun's shining.
Going off for a bevy later.
All's right with the world.
Yeah. Apart from the Reds.
Even there.
It has been a bit of a grim few weeks, though, hasn't it? It's hard. I find this, and I know you feel this way too, and I think we all do. There's just a percentage of happiness that Liverpool not winning steals from your life on a day-to-day basis. And it's exacerbated by all the noise that now surrounds Liverpool on a daily basis through social media and mainstream media and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it'd be nice if we could just actually win a game, because I'm struggling to work out why I don't feel happy, and it's probably just because of Liverpool.
Yeah, at the start of a season, you want to start winning football matches, don't you? And if you've gone three games and you haven't won one, every doom and gloom merchant says, well, we can't win the league now. The whole season's, you know, gone to pot. You know, let's play our first team against Derby in the League Cup. You know, that's all we're going to get this season. I mean, it just makes everyone, you know, miserable. And all the people on Twitter and everywhere else who are horrible most of the time get even doubly horrible when we haven't won a game of football.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, and it's true. It's tough, isn't it, Chloe, because we all just want to get about the business. This is that first month of the season. In fact, you're meant to get a month, 6 weeks or so, of just pure unbridled optimism. It's a new season. Everything exists in possibility. Before you get into the grind, when the Champions League comes back and all of a sudden you're playing twice a week and you realise that not every result is the be-all and end-all, or if you draw it can feel hard, blah, blah, blah. This is meant to be when it's fine, but to me, that's the point. Because of the knife edge the footy exists on, it does feel like you can't help but have those fears creep in of like, oh, well, what are we playing for now? Liverpool cocked it up already. And yet, just that general sense of just being ill at ease when Liverpool aren't pissing games of football like we used to.
Yeah, I think at the end of last season, everyone was like, thank God the football's over. Yeah. And I felt like that pretty much up until a week and a half before the football came back. The game, obviously, against City, it was like, I am ready for this season.
And we bounced out of the King Power Stadium that day.
And now I want an international break, to be perfectly honest. And I never say that. I can't be arsed with international football, but right now, give me one. I feel like I need another break. If Liverpool do not win on Saturday, I'm happy that we're not on the TV. That is my point. But people are going to watch it on Match of the Day anyway. So, but yeah, it feels like graft at times at the moment to watch us. I mean, I was at Fulham and I thought, surely we can't get any worse than that. And Palace was a bit better. We had our spells, but obviously we lost Darwin Nunes and we didn't come out with the result we wanted. And then against Manchester United, it was possibly worse than Fulham. And it's like, the Reds need to somehow, I don't know whether it's mentality, I just genuinely don't know what's up with us at the moment, and it's hard to put your finger on it because it seems like there's little potholes everywhere all over the pitch, and I'm just hoping that the mentality of these boys, we can swing it around.
I think that's the point, isn't it, Dad, is that there's injuries, and we'll talk about where Liverpool's current injury status is, but there's effectively an entire team of lads not available between injury and suspension. They can kind of cower over that and cry about it, you know, and it's going to be a bigger problem next week when there's two games, when there's Newcastle and the Derby, and, you know, in 7 days. But the point remains, regardless of how many games you've got to play, the lads who are available are going to have to be the lads to dig us out the shit. So, you know, we're going to have to see increased application no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, it's always the case, isn't it? The team you've got available is the team that's got to do the business. Mm. I mean, and it's Liverpool Football Club. You don't expect a team that goes on the pitch, at Anfield especially, not to win the game of football.
Yeah.
I don't care who it is that goes on the pitch.
Yeah.
You know, I still expect them to win. I mean, there's a lot of talk about we need to buy. If you've got 11 people out, I'm not so sure what difference one footballer coming in makes.
Yeah.
You know, how good has he got to be before he can actually change the problems that we've got at the moment? And the problems aren't that we haven't got the players to go on the pitch, because we're putting out a decent first team every time, even now.
Yeah.
I mean, we might not have the choice we want, or we might not be able to throw on five subs at any moment. But, you know, we're putting out a team which should win football matches. The problem we've got is we're not.
Yeah.
And we really need to look at why. And it's not just these three games. It goes way back to last season.
Yeah.
We couldn't score goals once teams realise that if they sit deep, we've nowhere to go.
Yeah.
You can press all you like. If there's no one there to press,
yeah. Well,
what the hell are you doing?
It's been Liverpool's weakness forever. You know, yeah. Teams have come in and parked the bus. I mean, we've gone to Anfield many years, years and years and years. You know, Tony Pulis used to do this with Stoke all the time. You know, we're actually living in a Premier League that has less of those type of sides, but it's become the method. You know, that's how clubs know. No point in a cup. Don't play wild open football against Liverpool because they'll kill you. The issue we've got, Chloe, and this is where injuries and, most importantly, I think suspension plays a part in this, is that I wonder whether Liverpool have identified this. But I don't. Bobby Firmino's not the answer to this type of problem, because if he was, we would have had no need to replace or upgrade upon Roberto Firmino. Salah can be the answer. Mane was a similar answer. We've obviously brought Darwin Nunes in. We've brought Jota in, and obviously the likes of Thiago as well, to try and help us with these kind of things. But at the minute, literally none of those lads can get on the pitch. So it does make you wonder whether more application, but do we actually need to do something different on the pitch? Because we're not far off that old adage of, like, you know, it's the definition of insanity if we keep trying to do the same thing knowing that you're likely to get the same result.
Yeah, and I think in games like that, you know, I think we had a Chelsea, the 1-1 last season, where they sat back, they scored from a corner, sat back a little bit, and we struggled to break them down. And you could feel the pressure. You felt, oh, there might be a goal here. But there comes to a time where the players on the pitch get so frustrated that it then frustrates the entire crowd. Yeah. And a lot of the time we force these long balls that everyone's like, you've got 35 minutes, calm yourselves down. And I don't know what the answer is. I thought Darwin Nunes would help us with those moves, because he's tall, you know, put one in the box for him, and his desire, make him go and win that header. And yeah, he can challenge people. He's very tall, but he's also very slick. He's very fast. Mm-hmm. So he can do more than one thing, and a defender's not just going to think, oh right, he's in behind me. He's also going to cut across me and win this header.
Yeah.
And his movement, you saw for the Fulham goal, I think it was, his movement was impeccable, but he did something absolutely stupid, and now we're back to plan A. And to be fair, we're very lucky that we've even got Roberto Firmino back, because he was nearly not playing.
Yeah.
And I don't think he played awful against Manchester United. He just wasn't in the areas we needed a striker to be in.
Yeah.
And if he sits that deep again against Bournemouth, if they do sit back, and fair play to Bournemouth, they seem like they're doing all right for a newly promoted side. But if it is that, you've got absolutely no one testing that back line, and that's the problem.
That's it. It just tactically just feels off as well, doesn't it, Dad? You know, we're trying something new, clearly.
Well, I mean, the signing of Darwin Núñez actually makes sense now. Mm-hmm. It didn't actually make sense to me when we first bought him. It seemed a bit of a knee-jerk reaction to suddenly want a young forward who, you know, whose experience is quite limited if you think about it. Why were we buying him, you know? And yet now, and he does look quite raw still when I've seen him play, you now realise that that's one of the solutions to putting 11 men behind the ball, is you actually get in there amongst them and rough them up a bit and out-jump them in the air for headers and, you know, put them under pressure, yeah. And then the likes of Cavalho coming in, who's very, very good inside the box, you know, and Diaz, who can beat three or four men at a time. They're all solutions to the problem that they've obviously identified. But, you know, when you lose Núñez and you're losing Thiago, you start to lose the ability to change. Yeah. And that's our problem at the moment. We're not able to change, even though we've identified the problem.
Yeah. And the problem is, as well, you've got Mo Salah, who we know is a supreme goal scorer, but you miss... The Mane absence is exacerbated because of the lack of Jota, because at the moment Diaz is still getting up to speed. I don't know that he's going to come close to Mane's goal tally. At the moment, I would suggest not.
He's too wide for me. Yeah. Mane, see, when the reason that Firmino sacrificed himself and looked so brilliant was because Mane was always cutting across the defender on the inside. He was outside a lot and he could beat a man, but his inside runs that always got him to the box where he was cutting across the right back or the right centre half. That's what meant, oh, we've still got someone attacking that back line. I love Diaz. He was probably our best player in that first half against Manchester United. But he was so far wide that when Bobby's up here, he's there and Salah's there. There's just, you know, Martinez, who's 5'9", being dominated by loads of people in the first two games, just had no one to mark. He could just mark the space.
Yeah. And again, it's Núñez not being on the pitch, isn't it? Because if you've got him on the pitch, you want people to be wide.
But my issue with this is, it feels like we're trying to stick to the formula that we're trying to generate. So we're trying to generate a new way of playing or a modified way of playing, but we're doing it without the focal point. Why isn't Firmino being told to play like that? Is my issue. He's like that Man United game. That was. Like the best and worst of Roberto Firmino, you know, when it works, when he's drawing men off the back line, he's going deep, he's picking the ball up, that's fine. But either you're telling him, because last season he wasn't playing like that, he didn't play loads of football for us, but he was playing much more on the end of things. He was getting into the box, he was vacating the box time and time again. He was on Jordan Henderson's toes, he was on Milner's toes, he was on in the centre circle too much. I just find that a bit odd, you know, because there's people's natural games, yes, but they're also no mates, no Bobby, that way, that, you know, like, yeah, he'll do it, you know. So it just feels, everything just feels a little bit off. It feels unplanned at the moment. It doesn't feel in our sphere of influence.
I would say though that Carvalho would help that, and I thought he helped it in the second half, because he was and Harvey Elliott is the only one who in my mind can keep their head up high from that game. They gave everything, the desire was there from them, and Carvalho, when he got the ball, he ran at Manchester United. We don't have anyone in our midfield. Yeah, Harvey Elliott does that, but he was on the he was with Salah and interchanging with Salah, so he wasn't really in the mid. Where Carvalho, when he got the ball, he drove forward into the middle of the park. He obviously has the shot that leads to our goal as well. He's there. He's in the areas where Bobby should be.
Yeah.
And I think maybe if he comes in and plays, that maybe might give Bobby license to stay up top and Carvalho say, I'm going to basically do what you do, but also when I pick this ball up, I'm going to turn and face and go, and you get on the shoulder. And it depends if
well,
he starts.
I think that's a really interesting thing. It's certainly one of the big decisions, which we'll be talking about later in the show, about the actual personnel and what we're going to do for this game. But I think that's an interesting point of the one thing you've got is an absence of people who are desperate to get into the box. Jota wants to be in the box. Núñez wants to be in the box. I think you're right, Carvalho does. Salah does. But I don't think Elliot does, and I don't think Diaz does. I think Elliot likes being the guy who kind of floats around and picks a pass and moves things forward, happy to get a shot from outside the box. But I don't see that, like, the give and go, I'm going to be bursting in, I'm going to be trying to get in between the sticks and get a shot away in that kind of way. So definitely something for Liverpool to think about. Fulham are above us. I'm not going to show the league table because it's three games in and I don't believe in it. Bournemouth are above us. Fulham
are above us.
Don't show this because it defeats my point.
Almost everyone's above us.
Fulham are above us. Fulham are in seventh at the moment.
It was a correct statement.
It was correct but irrelevant statements, yeah. Brentford are above us. Palace are above us. Forest are above us. Southampton are above us. Everyone apart from Everton, Wolves, Leicester and West Ham are above us right now. There'll be a tricky test. I mean, we've seen they can cause problems. They are still favourites to go down.
They shouldn't be a test. I've seen them against City and Arsenal, and they were absolutely dreadful. But they will sit back, and they will have someone they think can play up front on his own and chase long balls, and that's the game we're in. And it's going to be a question of, can we stop them scoring that one goal we normally concede?
The first goal.
In which case we get a bit more time to actually win the game, or whether or not we're chasing the game or not. It's just going to be the same as always. Whether Bournemouth have the ability to do it, you know, I would question. But
A couple of injuries and stuff for them. Potential David Brooks is out, obviously. Joseph Rothwell, who I'd never heard, is out with a thigh injury. Ryan Fredericks has been ruled out of this one. Dom Solanke is 50-50. Last word on this was on the 20th, and I'm hoping that maybe Dom will be back training next week, so hopefully he'll have a chance for Liverpool. Junior Stanislas is also a 25% chance of playing in this game as well. The Solanke stuff, I could do without the circus around him, to be honest, because he is clearly our first experiment with getting a big target man kind of stuff to get up in the box and play around and stuff, which didn't work. But given how short we are, I could really do with him not playing. Or if he does, can he be rubbish? Can he be as bad as like Benteke always seems to be when he played against us post signing for us? Not when he was at Villa, when he was unbelievable.
I mean, they brought him in, he was very young, wasn't he? I think he'd been in the English side, which won the under-18 World Cup. Didn't look very good. He actually got more chances than you thought he would have done at that age.
Yeah.
Played a lot of time on the, you know, for Liverpool.
Scored
in the very last game of the season. That was the only goal he got.
Yeah.
At which point I realised that he was never going to be a centre forward for us.
There was a little moment where he scored that because we basically moved our front three back a row and put him in front of it. And I was like, well, this is all very Robert Lewandowski-esque.
If he'd scored in the first game rather than the last, I might have been impressed.
Yeah, I don't think Sarr's recovered from him being picked in that
derby
game.
He's gone to Bournemouth and eventually he's found his feet in the Championship. And good luck to him. I think he's probably a good forward.
Yeah.
But he's not what we want. But he's obviously found his niche at Bournemouth.
Yeah, 30. He scored 15 and 45 in the Championship in his first season and then 30 and 48 last season. I mean,
that's good.
The things to be wary of this is that, like, a lot of people were asking the Alexander Mitrovic question on the opening day and saying, well, it's all well and good being good in the Championship, but can you do it in the Premier League? That's where we need to be a little bit careful around this because, you know, he is coming up in goal scoring form.
We all know that if they're going to score, he's going to score it, isn't he? If he's on the pitch. Even if it just bounces off his head.
Will he celebrate? Does he care enough about us to not celebrate?
I would celebrate if I was.
I don't know. Did he have he felt like he had a good relationship with Klopp, so maybe not, but who knows?
It's been Scott Parker's a bit of an odd one because I still bear the scars of 2021. I'm not totally keen on that jacket he keeps wearing with the weird stripes on the arm.
No, that's exactly what I thought when you said him.
It's funny because I thought, why the hell is he leaving Fulham for Bournemouth? And it's been great for both clubs because Fulham have gone on from strength to strength and he's managed to turn Bournemouth around and bring them up. I think Fulham are still a much better side than Bournemouth, but
he's obviously a decent manager and he's gone under the radar. There's a few of these guys, aren't there? Obviously Vieira's doing something at Crystal Palace. All the focus was very much on Gerrard and very much on Lampard, but there's another similar age generation. Apparently there's a lot of hope for Scott Parker. I could really do with him just being
shite.
Yes, thank you, Chloe. That's exactly the word I was reaching for. If he could just be crap, that would be brilliant. Thanks
just for
much.
A week after that.
Just
be all right.
Go back to being a whale beater. You know, we'll be up in potential. One little note, actually, that I think has gone a little bit under the radar, but they played in midweek because obviously Liverpool fans, we hope so rarely that we're in the second round of the League Cup, that I always like, I hear Evertonians go, it's always the, why is this game not on telly? Or where can we see this game? Then, it's the second round of the League Cup time. They obviously got through. They beat Norwich on penalties 5-3 in the end. Obviously, it doesn't go to extra time or anything, so it goes 90 minutes straight to pen. So it's not like they've had tons of extra exertion, Chloe. But that could play into Liverpool's hands. I'm not sure quite how strong they were, but the fact that they've had to prepare for another game midweek should... Hopefully it's taken a little bit out of the legs, which will add to our favour, you'd surmise.
Yeah, I hope so. And I hope the fact that we haven't got a full week, have we, because we played Monday. But I hope that the time that we've obviously had off not playing midweek means that we've had more training sessions and Jurgen Klopp just screaming at them and saying, lads, I need a reaction from you. And hopefully we can do it against Bournemouth, who... You know, they don't play well. To be fair, the Championship at the end, there's a lot of games there, isn't it? Yeah. So they are probably actually used to doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
Just they're not used to doing it and having to play a Liverpool side. And
Christ, I was trying to fight that one away. Yeah.
Whoever they played, they're just not used to having Premier League sides in the middle. So yeah, I mean, even Norwich isn't an easy task. They've only just went down as well. So hopefully that gives us some kind of advantage. I'll take anything at this point.
They beat Villa, didn't they, in their first game, which surprised me. I really thought, you know, Villa would wipe the floor with them.
Yeah.
But I had a look at the stats on that, and Bournemouth only had 30-odd%, like 34% possession, and still won the game, which suggests that they are able to lie deep and let the other team have all the ball like they will against us.
Yeah.
But then I saw them against City and Arsenal, and they just wiped the floor with Bournemouth. They didn't have any truck with them at all.
Yeah. Just looking at it in terms of the game against Norwich in the week, I'm not going to sit here and pretend I know too much about Bournemouth squad members or whatever, but they had Neto and goal, Greenwood, Senesi, Hill, Stacey across the back four, Pearson and Cook as a two-man midfield, Anthony and Marcondes, and Christie behind Asaidi.
That's not their team. That's a weekend side.
Yeah, and just in terms of that, like, Senesi played against Arsenal, and Pearson played as well, but that's pretty much it. So
the other thing that worries me is the two teams that we've mentioned them playing, which is City and Arsenal, are scoring goals for fun.
Mm-hmm.
Liverpool aren't. So it's also a case of...
Are they scoring goals for fun because they're playing Bournemouth? So that's the question that we need to answer.
I don't know. I hope so. I hope that's the reason. But it's a case of they're going to put their strongest 11 out, and it depends what they do. Scott Parker likes to play football. He doesn't like to sit back, so that might have an effect.
You'd have to be stupid to come to Liverpool and not sit back.
A lot of people are stupid, though. Sometimes they do just
think... jackets?
They do just think that there are teams that have came to Anfield and stupidly thought that we might not have loads of possession, but when we do, we can knock it about. And they don't realise how high the press is, especially with that Anfield crowd. And hopefully
We're in a weird situation with this, though, because I think we started so strongly against Palace, but then you don't score and you got great optimism from the crowd, and then it's sort of tailed off when it's not, and obviously they score as well, which kind of cuts the legs off us a bit. But I just wonder whether approach-wise, whether we might just be better. You want to get a fast start to get the crowd on side, but you don't leave yourself open. Don't burn yourself out. You know, it's 90 minutes. That's what we've been so good at over the years, is remembering it's a 94, 95 minute game of football. Feel your way into it, but the problem is when you've got no game changers on the bench, you've kind of got to get it won in 70 minutes. It's a bit of a basket.
You know, the
case.
Game where I first realised that, though, was Wolves last game of the season, where for the life of us, for some reason, we were forcing everything, and it was just every time we got the ball, hoof, lump it in the, and we were like, lads, you've got 70 minutes. What are you? Calm down and play your football, and you'll get through.
Yeah.
And instead, because we knew that they were losing, and we just lost our heads a bit and just tried to force it too much. And I think that's the first time we've seen it, and now we're obviously seeing it pretty much every game.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side?
helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey guys, it's nearly the end of August, which means we will soon be doing our Club Legend prize draw. This month's prize is this amazing framed, signed, shared by none other than Liverpool's European Cup winning captain, Mr. Phil Thompson. If you want to be involved in this prize draw, all you got to do is be a Club Legend subscriber on Red Men Plus. If you've never been over to Red Men Plus before, do check it out. Sign up for Club Legend. You'll get access to our Discord chat. You get free merch, you get discounted merch, and of course, entry into this competition. If you're a Club Captain over on Red Men Plus, do upgrade to Club Legend and you too will be in the prize draw. Time is running out, so go and do it. Go and do it now.
Hey, yes, welcome back. Yeah, if you want to get into the draw for the signed Phil Thompson 77 European Cup shirt, then you can do. Go to redmenplus.com, sign up. One of the added perks of joining as a Club Legend, aside from being put into amazing prize draws every month, is we've got our Discord, which is full of Club Legends, which is just full of just wonderfully sound human beings. And as we've already kind of hinted at, I'm pretty unprompted as well. Like, everyone's having a bit of a torrid time dealing with Liverpool chat online. The amazing people we've got in our Club Legends, it's like a calming chat oasis where people can have reasonable discourse about the Reds without resorting to name calling or using the horrible terms or trying to put people, pigeonhole people into boxes using like words like top and bottom and all that kind of stuff. We don't need any of that stuff. So yeah, if you want to talk about Liverpool and chat with Liverpool and have some Liverpool mates online, but you don't want knobheads, there's a no dickhead policy in our Club Legends Discord chat. So yeah, one of the other perks, as well as all the extra content, redmenplus.com. Right, sound. The trivia question was, there are four players who've played for both Liverpool and Bournemouth currently playing for other Premier League sides. To ease into this, there's another couple of players that both teams have got currently own a player who has played for both. Any idea who? We've definitely discussed at least one of them.
Dom Solanke
is one. There was another one. He turned up for Liverpool the last time we played at Anfield.
Come again.
Played centre-half for Liverpool.
Nat Phillips.
There we go. So there's two, but they don't count as the answers for this question. I asked the Club Legends this question. Scott T correctly says Adam Lallana is one.
I didn't even know he played football.
Big fan of, apparently, he's got his favourite strip club down there. That's a rumour. Unsubstantiated, but I think it's true. Right, sound. There's a good shout here for... Ooh, what else have we got? So there was a shout for Jordan Ibe. No, Jordan Ibe doesn't currently play in the Premier League. As we mentioned off-air, he's in the second division. He's playing for Anaspor or something in the second division of Turkey. But he has played for both. No more stabs on this one?
I don't know. Did Jamie Redknapp ever play for his dad?
Jamie Redknapp did, but he's not currently playing in the Premier League. So it's a good shout for play for both. We played against one. In fact, we played against one last time at Anfield as well. One place for Crystal Palace.
Palace. Nathaniel Clark.
Played for Liverpool. Yeah, there you go. Nathaniel Clark. There you go. Played, because did we loan him to Bournemouth? Anyway, he was there. I'll give you the answers because this is going down like a fucking lead balloon.
I've got Nathaniel Clark and I'm taking that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I couldn't have soft served that anymore. But,
mine's not all there.
Nathaniel Clark. Danny Ings.
Yeah.
Adam Lallana, I shouted out. And Harry Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
Additional players to that, just in more recent terms, obviously Jamie Redknapp played, Nathaniel Phillips played for, Brad Smith, of course, played for both. We sold him to them. Nigel Spachman, Dad.
Yeah.
Wow. David James, apparently. Didn't know that. Jordan Ibe. Doug Livermore. Laurie Dalavalle, yeah, Jimmy Case.
Wow.
Yeah, loads and loads of lenders, a bunch I've never heard of in my life after that, but yeah. Alex Watson?
Yeah.
Who was he?
He was an old player.
Sad. Okay.
The thing is, it sounds like Bournemouth have all of our players at some point in their careers.
Yeah, definitely. Everyone passes through Bournemouth at least once.
I mean, it's where you go to retire anyway, isn't it, Bournemouth?
Yeah, so. Definitely. Okay, cool. If you got that right, you're absolutely brilliant. Give yourself a massive pat on the back. And if you got that right and you're in the live show chat right now, give yourself the reward of dropping a like.
Also, get a life.
Wow. Okay, sorry. Apologies. Pick yourself up. You've just been bodied by John Machin live on stream. Right, cool. Let's talk about Liverpool's injury situation then. I've just done Journal Insight with Neil Jones and we were discussing, this is one of the main talking points on that show, was how few players have there's an obvious return date for. Like, you know when you often talk about players and you go, well, I know he's back in 3 weeks. Like Thiago, they immediately said 4 to 6 weeks. Yeah. And so we had people calculated that'd be like 9 games. And then Klopp said, I hope it's more like 4. So we have a rough idea that we're probably 2 or 3 weeks maybe away from Thiago hopefully being back in training.
Mid-September is what I heard.
Yeah. So injury room has got Diogo Jota down as being the 3rd of September. Joel Matip is the 3rd of September. Kelleher should be back by the end of the week or by the end of next week. Curtis Jones should be back next week according to them. Keita potentially. But, you know, and there's no return date on Oxlade-Chamberlain, Konate or Calvin Ramsey. But it just feels like, I mean, at this point, as I said, we've got a team worth of players out, Dad. It doesn't feel like there's no cavalry coming anytime soon. And even if Liverpool were to drop into the transfer market today, it's not helping us for Bournemouth at the weekend. And it's probably not helping us for Newcastle in midweek next week. That is a concern because if you're looking at the lads at Old Trafford and the performance there, if you're hoping, there's nothing we can do to shake that up other than it has to be done internally. Maybe there's a couple of tactical tweaks. Maybe there's one or two little shifts we could do, but it seems like the answer's going to have to come in soul searching, and that's not something that you can put like a real value on.
I think there's too much crisis talk. Mm. I mean, the match against United, we were on a hiding to nothing.
Yeah,
you know, they'd lost their first two games badly.
Yeah,
including their first home game. The fans are up in arms. They want to set fire to the ground and things. They're just, you know, the whole club is in crisis, and then they play their biggest arch rivals, and they have a whole week or 9 days or something to fire them all up. You know, I just think, you know, it's one of those things. Yeah. I mean, I don't, even at our best, I think we'd have struggled to win that game, mm-hmm, because of the emotion that went into it from United. And I don't think we should read too much into it. The problem was our first two games, you know, people sort of found us out and stopped us scoring. And they're the ones you should be looking at rather than the United game. Forget about the United game. You know, Fulham, you know, and Crystal Palace, they both gave us problems.
Yeah.
And we need to solve those problems. United gave us totally different problems.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I mean, it's a point. And I think I've been kind of trying to, I've been circling that point for a few days in that, I don't think it feels catastrophic because it's Man United and it matters so much, and they are crap. But also, as you kind of point out, they are at least on paper better than both the teams that we've drawn against previously. So I think that's a good point that you need to, you can, I mean, I've been saying this for a while, you can lose at Old Trafford, it never feels right, but you should be able to lose at Old Trafford and not be a massive point of the season. But it became, I mean, that because of the performances in the two games.
We nearly always lose at Old Trafford. Yeah. You know, that's the history of.
But we've been telling ourselves United are shite, and we've beaten five, nine goals on aggregate last season.
If we'd beaten United, we'd still have the same problems we've got today. Why did we draw a Fulham, and why did we draw a Crystal Palace?
Yeah.
They're the problems we've got, not whether we beat or were beaten by United. Mm-hmm. The problem is totally different. That sort of masks the real issue.
Yeah.
And the real issue is that we're not scoring goals.
Yeah. I think that's a big thing. And I guess big decisions-wise, Claude, there's, I guess Fabinho's, you would expect Fabinho just to come back in for this. It feels to me a little bit like, and this is again a knock-on impact of how many players are unavailable. There's no world where Fabinho doesn't start at Old Trafford, if not for we're just trying to protect him and Henderson a little bit, because we're one more injury away from genuinely being in deep shit here. So you'd expect him to come back in?
Yeah, I think after what happened, you have to. He's not being great, let's be honest, but you could say that for at least nine other players on that football pitch in the first three games. So, yeah, he has to start for me, because I can't see Milner and Henderson together, especially. I can slightly understand it against United, because it's United. It's like a derby. It's one of the biggest games of the season. This is now even bigger than the United game because of what's happened, and it's Bournemouth. You cannot have those three as your sitting midfield three. Mm-hmm. I need someone attacking, because you're going to assume that Bournemouth are going to sit back and they're going to be hard to break down, and they'll be happy with anything out of the game. So we're United, it was a case of that at home, that everyone's already fuming. They're going to need a reaction. Now Liverpool, you've got to change stuff. And Fabinho comes in, and Fabinho gives you the license to put a more attacking-minded footballer on that midfield.
That's the thing. Klopp referenced this, didn't he, post-match against United, that he said, I can't even change formation because I haven't got another attacker. But I don't know whether, because I suppose he probably sees, whether he sees 4-2-3-1 as a change of formation, because it's not really. If you've already got an attacking midfielder in your middle three, then 4-3-3 and 4-2-3-1 are just positional difference.
One's more advanced and stays there pretty much.
It's game state more
would,
than.
It would give you
tactics.
Possibly the option of bringing in Cavalho, because at the moment, if he's playing a three, he's not playing Elliot and Cavalho on the same side.
Yeah.
You know, there's just no way he's going to do that. But if you were playing, you know, 4-2-3-1, then there'd be options there that might allow it. But I'm still not convinced he's going to go, you know, that gung-ho.
Because that's the thing, we talked about it before. Positionally wise, my concern with Carvalho is it's too soon. And I don't think we should be throwing all of our hopes onto 19-year-old new signings, because we've seen it with Elliot already. You know, the injury really rocked him last year. He looked like he was absolutely flying. We need to rehabilitate him, because you only get to burst on the scene once, and that youthful exuberance will carry you through a lot of stuff. And it's very difficult to replicate that if you get stopped in any way. We've seen so many young players have their careers not hit the highs before just mad circumstances. Like Rian Brewster's a great example of that. He should be a generational sort of talent. He had everything going for him, but he gets injured at the wrong time, and he's never kind of recovered from that psychologically, physiologically. Bought the Carvalho thing, everything that we said about Firmino earlier, if Bobby's being told to drop deep, then somebody's got to be told to fill that space, and there's definitely something in that. I did a show for Lab Bible this week talking about like Chelsea 0405 and how Drogba facilitates Lampard's goal scoring brilliance that season. 0809 for Liverpool, Torres facilitates Gerrard's goal scoring brilliance that season. And I'm not, that's a, they are some huge shoes to fill for a 19-year-old kid. So again, that's where I'm wary of pressure. But if Elliot wants to be bits and pieces around the edge of the box, he might not be the answer for this game. It actually might be a Carvalho and just say,
we shouldn't forget, it's not that long ago, the Klopp's go-to three in midfield was Wijnaldum, Henderson and Milner.
Yeah.
He likes safety first in his midfield. I think to expect Milner to play three games on the bounce might be, particularly with Newcastle a few days away, he might want to give Jimmy Milner a rest this time out and play Henderson. I think, well, Chris in his team selection programme said midfield of Henderson and Harvey Elliott and Fabinho. That seems probably the most likely, to be honest. I can't see him dropping Harvey Elliott because he's playing well. He's not going to do without Fabinho again, I don't think. I mean, it's not that long ago we thought our team without him was, you know, totally disastrous. You know,
But the same could be said of Henderson as well, you know.
And Henderson, well, fair enough, you would have to play him on the left, but he's such a worker, and he also does get forward.
I'm not against the idea of putting Elliott on the left of midfield, you know.
He's left-footed, I don't know why we haven't.
And because he's the closest thing we've got available at the moment to what Thiago can do in terms of that.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's what I mean. There's a pecking order, and but because the awkwardness of Elliott means that somebody's going to have to play left of that midfield three, and it's just who's the better fit. And it's whether Elliott is Elliott so established on that right hand side, and are we so set on another inverted footballer on the right? Whereas there's just something to
Thiago plays on the left, so
you
know he's inverted.
But you never have left footed midfielders, do you? So it feels like it's only a problem we ever come up against when we have you drop a left footed in anywhere other than a left wing position. No one knows what to.
It just seems like the received wisdom, isn't it? That everyone has to be inverted.
No left footed has ever played right sided centre half in the history of football. It's mental. But right footers can be trusted all day long to play the left side of centre back.
I do love a left footed centre half.
God, absolutely. I'm here for it. I'm lefties of the world unite, people. But the I just wonder whether there's a tactical shift there, because Henderson is so established down that right hand side, and he does have that understanding with Trent and with Salah. And what you get as well is if Trent's having a little struggle at the moment with his form,
Henderson's better than
I'd rather have Henderson bombing back and getting in and covering those spaces. I think it asks too much of Elliott, because look, we were much better at Old Trafford when Elliott just fixed himself in like a right attacking midfield slot, and we just went through him. But it does leave you exposed a little bit, whereas if you put him on that left hand side, you've got a bit more assurance, because Robbo's just that bit more solid down that side. You've got Virgil behind as well, which I think helps. I'm just throwing it out there. I wouldn't be opposed to that, because if our system is built around our creativity in midfield coming from the left side of midfield role, then why not just put the only creative midfielder who gets in the team on that side of the pitch? Or give Carvalho
a go. The other thing, I mean, it doesn't get talked about a lot, is our team and our goals depend so much on our fullbacks.
Yeah,
if teams are going to sit deep, then a lot of what they used to do, which is put balls in behind defences, is not available. And I personally am not sure Robbo's played very well for a while, simply because he's no longer able to bomb forward on the left and go past fullbacks and put crosses in.
And also Diaz kind of gets in his way a bit.
But even when Diaz isn't on the pitch, even when Mane was there, Robbo wasn't doing it any longer. He tends to get the ball with his foot that way and come back inside all the time. And it's not because, I don't think it's because he hasn't got the engine anymore. I do think he looks up and he sees fullbacks and he sees people behind fullbacks and he sees someone behind there, and he thinks there's no real path through there. And I think we've got to find a solution to how much more our fullbacks need to contribute. I think their assists are probably going to go down dramatically, particularly Robbo's, because he doesn't quite have the delivery that Trent does.
Well, it's interesting. He's still getting into some of our best situations of those first three games.
He's actually got in the box more often than some of our forwards.
Honestly, again, this is what we said this last season. If he ever learns how to shoot, he could be a game changer for us. But that's the problem, is that he can't shoot.
He can't head either.
But we should be maybe asking a little bit more of him in that regard. But I've seen a couple of times against United, got some great space on that left-hand side, got to the byline a couple of really good times, did the same against Fulham. The only good things we did in that first half against Fulham was freeing Robbo and or Diaz at the back post. But you're right, if he's going to do what he does, someone needs to gamble near post or somebody needs to gamble towards the goalkeeper, and Bobby Firmino isn't that, so he either need to tell him to do that.
But Diaz has started to do it a bit. He comes in and he lays Robbo in a few times, and a few tricks and flicks can do that. But I do think if we can improve the number of assists from the fullbacks again, get it up to the normal level, that will be a far more dangerous side.
There's also a little bit which we don't want to skate around too much. I just want to see, Verge be a bit more aggressive.
Honest to God, I've called him out already how many times. I've been both away games, and both away games he's went straight down the tunnel and not even clapped the fans. If there's someone who needs to have a look at themselves, it is Virgil van Dijk, because I'm absolutely sound with you being boss for four seasons straight and having a bit of a dip and coming back from an injury and not playing as good. I'm absolutely sound with that. I'll stick behind you when you're wearing the Liverpool shirt, but if you're not coming over and clapping the fans and thanking them for coming to the game and paying their wages to watch you, and then get off the football pitch.
You wonder whether he might have a little niggle and he's nursing it. And,
I don't know whether he's
going off for treatment or all sorts.
Yeah.
See, the other thing that worries me, and I'm not suggesting this is Virgil by any means, this is a World Cup coming up.
Yeah.
And the number of players who go through the motions desperate not to be injured before the World Cup.
I said, and it's just a consideration, again, there's tons of things. I'm going to do a video probably later today on my channel about all the fears and potential problems around Liverpool or what have you. Yeah. The World Cup thing is absolutely, that's a massive part of it. And obviously, but also off the back of how much effort was put in. Me and Chris were just talking about plans for around like November, December when the World Cup's on. And we were talking about like, let's just potential live shows or whatever. And we were like, well, A, it's England and we're not arsed. And Chris immediately went, but also having a break. And I've thought that too. And everyone I've spoken to is a bit like, kind of looking forward to the World Cup as a break. And there's no way that the players aren't having a little bit of that as well. Everyone's got this idea on it's a straight burn until mid-November, and then you're either going to the World Cup and you're into the World Cup, or you're off and you're having a bit of recuperation, and you know something psychologically is not quite right. And we're just talking as fans, and this might not translate to the players in any way, shape or form, but for discussion's sake, we're all having a little bit, you said it before with the international break, could all just do with a break already. It's not started yet, and we're already thinking about where your break comes. Like when you wake up on a Monday morning and you're like, oh, when's Friday, or when's my next day off, means you're not rested and ready for the week if you're already thinking about when your next break is. It's a small consideration. Hopefully elite sports people don't think the way that we do. They're not as mentally weak as us. But
the thing about Virgil is he just not lethargic. I don't know what it is. He just doesn't seem urgent with what he does.
But he never does. But that's the thing, though. But I agree that, I don't know, it's just things aren't clicking for him as easily, I don't think. I think the way, when you're that kind of footballer, I think Trent's got a similar issue with that. They're both so good that when you like Gerrard had this at the peak of his powers, you could just wave your foot at the ball and it'd be like, phew, perfect. Every single time, it'll go exactly where you want. And I don't know what the process is when that stops working for you. Because I remember like the end of Gerrard's career, a couple of games when he was tasked with dragging us out the shit. In fact, it was 13-14 and he's having like shots from distance. It's like, Stevie, that's not been your game for like 3 or 4 years now, mate. You haven't had that in your locker. But he's hoping, because he's done it before, he'll still be able to do it. When you're not, when you're that kind of player, and it's all about your talent and your skill, not about your raw physicality and not about this and that, I think sometimes it can be hard. I don't know how you, it can be just in your head sometimes. That's where I'm concerned about.
The thing about Virgil is he's always been laid back and he's always casual. He looks casual, but always does the job. I mean, have you ever seen him hail himself on the ground in front of anything?
No.
But for me, the difference was in years past, like, he'd stop players, so he'd get out to them, he'd make a bit more of an effort. I don't know what it is. He'd get to the man just a little. You wouldn't
close
think he was out of
close him down a lot quicker.
You wouldn't think he was out of stride or he was busting a gut to get there, but he got there faster and then it stopped everything and slowed everything down.
There is a little thing, I think, where you're trying to prove that you're all right by doubling down on how you do things. Yeah. You know, where you can, like, well, you've got to show that I'm fine by showing how laid back I am in this situation. You don't want to appear to break a sweat because it breaks the aura. You know what I mean? You'll have people thinking you're struggling more than you are. Whereas actually, the problem is with the levels of analysis, and you saw it with Sky and then Milner's bollock and Virgil on the pitch, there's a few more eyes on him, and it could just do with maybe just flex your muscles a bit. Yeah. Actually, just go and aggressively win something just to let everyone know that I'm dead pissed off here.
Yeah.
Don't fucking try me, mate, because I'll do you. I'll have
and
you.
If that's what I mean. That's why I remember PSG coming to Anfield and Milner within the first 5 minutes put one on Neymar, yeah, and it was like don't start.
Yeah.
We'll do this all game.
Yeah.
And if it's not me, it'll be Robbo or it'll be someone else on the pitch. It'll be Jordan Henderson. And every time you try and get past me, whether I'm getting a yellow card or not, I'm putting one on you, and yeah, I'm making sure you know I'm there. And I think you need to do that.
I'm expecting a big game from Berge and from Trent this weekend, to be honest. Cause I think they both know they've got a bit of a point to prove. And I thought Trent was brilliant against Palace in that, particularly when, you know, we needed to go up a level and he really wanted to influence that game. Hopefully we'll see more of that. We're going to be picking our 11s in a minute. We had a super chat before we move on to the Betmate teams from Jaden Granville with $7.99 Australian dollars. Thank you so much, mate. He says, Bournemouth, a good game for everyone to, brackets, hopefully, kick into gear a bit. Start at the back with Verge, Trent, Robbo, Simi, and the rest onward. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Show you're impenetrable. You know, like, show some steel first. Show that they've got no chance. Tell them their entire game is just being pinned back and pummeled to bits until we finally win. And show that the whole Fortress Anfield thing would be very nice to make sure that we maintain. What is your 11 for this one, Dad?
The obvious defenders,
because there's none others. Maybe Tsimikas.
Well, Tsimikas, I think, is knocking on the door, but I don't think he's going to come in for this one particularly. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, Trent, Gomez, Van Dijk, and Robbo with Alisson behind them.
Yeah,
midfield. You know, we're only talking four players possibly there.
Yeah.
I don't think Cavalho and Elliot will play in the same team. So I'm thinking Fabinho, Elliot and Henderson.
Mm-hmm.
And up front, the obvious three of Mo Salah, Bobby Firmino and Diaz.
Any movement on that, Clown?
I'd like us to be more attacking and play 4-2-3-1 and maybe put Carvalho or Elliot in the 10, but it's not going to happen. So I'd start Costas, to be honest, because Robertson's the one that I'd rather him play the derby. And I know we've got Newcastle before that, but maybe you give Costas a run in, because
it's whether you give Costas Newcastle.
But he keeps bringing him on with like 2 minutes to go, and it is the maddest substitute.
Well, it's part. I think some reasons it's protecting Robertson, and others it's keeping Tsimikas in his eye in a little bit. But the Tsimikas thing's not a bad shout. It only because if we're talking about a team that's going to sit in, and you're at home, and you're going to dominate possession and all that kind of stuff, that if Robertson's not getting into these powerful drives, overlap and getting to the byline, Tsimikas does have, I think, generally better delivery.
Yeah, yeah. Better cross from
he's,
the ball,
he's our best corner taker for me.
Well, that's an interesting one. So maybe there is an outside shelf for Costas Tsimikas. Interesting stuff. Right, let's have a look then at the other Premier League fixtures, which at some point I've totally removed from the screen. We know we are a 3 p.m. kickoff, which is very...
Leeds, Brighton Leeds.
Yep.
3 p.m.
Okay,
good City start. Crystal Palace, 3 p.m.
Yep.
It's someone v Fulham, it's the 5:30 kickoff, maybe Arsenal.
Arsenal versus Fulham, well done, Chloe.
12:30 is Manchester United, maybe.
Away at?
It's someone not great, I don't think.
Southampton, well done.
Yeah. Sunday, I don't know.
So yeah, 12:30, Southampton, Man United. I mean, if they want to turn up in like that green kit there and then blame how it looks like too much like the grass or something, that'll be a great throwback. Chelsea host Leicester at 3:00, as mentioned. Brighton host Leeds. City host Palace. The two ones that stand out for me in the weekend, apart from our own, are Crystal Palace travelling to Man City and Fulham travelling to Arsenal. And the obviously two teams that have taken points off us already. It would be absolutely sensational if they could do that against another team that has pretensions at the top of the league, just to show that it's not because we're shit, or exclusively because we're shit. It'd be nice if it was because they're actually decent teams who are capable. I don't think Crystal Palace will get anything from Man City, and the major reason I do think this is because they did twice last year, and I think Pep seals doors up like Wolves did it a couple of seasons ago, and then after that they had no change out of them.
Vieira though. Connection though.
The next Man City manager in lieu, potentially. Fulham going away to us. It'd be nice if Mitrovic could go and shake them up a bit.
And with Zaha, if they play him through the middle, which is where I think he's probably best, then he's going to give them problems if they, you know, rather than just sit back and do nothing like most teams do,
yeah,
they've got an outlet.
Yeah, absolutely. We got a super chat from MKH31 who said Liverpool will bounce back 3 points versus the Cherries. I like that optimism. Let's have more of that, certainly. Yeah, there you go. They're the big games. I want to let you know. I want you to let me know in the comments what you think is likely to happen across them. What your starting 11 for Liverpool going to be? And just look, if I say, if you just want to get stuff off your chest, get stuff off your chest. Just be nice. Just don't be nasty to all the Liverpool fans. Everyone wants Liverpool to be on top, right? Right. No amount of begging for transfers is going to make any difference to that, unfortunately. So let's all stick in this together. If you go in the game, then make sure you're full, fit and ready and mad for the fight, and let's go and scream our hearts and lungs out of this team at the weekend and hopefully get the season up and running. Wouldn't that be nice?
I'd love it.
Score prediction, Dad?
2-0.
Chloe?
I predicted them and we've lost, or we've drawn three times, yeah. 3-1 Liverpool.
2-0 to Liverpool.
I say that, but I don't think we can score three goals, never mind. 1-0.
I'm having a little bit of like, genuinely I'm a bit of like, well, you know, let's come back with that. I'm not arsed how we win.
We really need a bit of luck. Yeah. You know, one of those which hits the post and goes in rather than goes out. You know, one of those.
Definitely. I completely agree with that. Right, yeah. Score predictions, start 11 predictions and more. Start 11 prediction show is out already because Pajak did that, I believe. Did he do that? Yeah. This one already? Good on him. What's his team? Oh, wow. That's a good team. I'm sure he's been getting all kinds of stick because he's put certain players in that other people like more or less. It's just the world we live in now, apparently. If you want more from us, do check out Redmen Plus. Neil Jones on JNO Insight with me talking about all the potential targets been linked in midfield that Liverpool may or may not move for in the final week of the transfer market. There's also Around the League and a whole host of other shows, including Debate Show and more. So yeah, if you want videos or podcasts and, of course, that Boss Discord group, then do head over to redmenplus.com. Thank you so much, guys. Absolute pleasure. And Champions League draw, if you're live, will follow this evening. It's a 2-hour live show on actual normal telly. I've got no idea when the draws happen, so come and join me,
4
Chris.
4 p.m.
Me, yeah. Is it?
Oh, no, that's when it starts.
Yeah, 5 p.m. at least. Anyway, we'll be live from 5. Me, Chris, and Chloe for the Champions League draw. Hopefully, we get a Boss one. We can all be excited about that. See you there. Ta-da.
Thank you for tuning in. If you want more Redmen TV content in your life, head over to redmenplus.com and sign up now. You can get access to a whole host of other content, including interviews, documentaries, pre- and post-match content. As well, if you join as a club legend, you will also get perks such as free merch, discount on merch, tickets to live shows, and much, much more. Head over to Redmen Plus now.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.